Hey guys, thank you so much for stopping by Legend Church's weekly podcast. Just a quick reminder, you can check us out at legendchurch.com, find us on Facebook and Instagram, and Sunday mornings in Madisonville. But hey, without further ado, set the cruise control, start mountain run, or grab a drink, and let's talk about all things Jesus.
So we're starting a new series today. I think it's going to be awesome. I hope today isn't weird, but we'll see. Whenever I say that, my wife's like, oh my gosh, it's going to be weird. But we'll see. There's a story about Jesus that I think is my... if you've been here any length of time, you've probably heard me talk about it because it's the quintessential story for me. It's my favorite story in all of the scriptures. I think this story probably points to everything we ever need to know about God, about Jesus. And it's this story where, like, he's dead and he's come back. That's all happened. It's where he's making these, like, pop-up appearances where people are like, oh, there he is. And you have the disciples who've given up. They're like, yeah, that didn't work out for us. So they went back to fishing, right? So they're just fishing. And they look over at the shore and they see a guy. And one of them's like, I think it's Jesus. And I'm like, I don't probably know. He's dead. But it's Jesus on the shore. And he's making them fish. So they come in. And I love this story because I like to think, like, Jesus is there and he's already made them breakfast, right? He's made it. That means he either bought or caught some fish. He gutted them, like scaled them, cut off their heads, gutted them, filleted them. Like, that's what you do with fish. It's kind of a bloody mess. I kind of like that too. It's gutty and gross. And he did that. I mean, I guess he could have had someone else do it, but someone did it. He built a fire, and he's just making them breakfast. And the whole story is that they come in and they have breakfast with Jesus. There's no, like, big teaching. There's no, like, he doesn't sit down. And he's like, hey, guys, this is it. I'm getting ready to go. And make sure you do all the right things and say all the right things and hate these people and don't like these things and do these things. Like, none of that. There was none of that. There's no teaching in it. It just get the idea that they had breakfast. And Jesus made them some fish, and they ate. And maybe there was some teaching. Maybe they told stories. Maybe they laughed. Maybe they cried. But that's it. It's just that one story. And what I love about this story is that you see two sides of Jesus that I think are rampant throughout his entire personality that we get through the scriptures. And one is intimacy. Man, there's something intimate in just sitting down and having breakfast and eating with people. There's something intimate there. And man, Jesus is intimate with everyone. And engaging, those two things. So I want to talk about that for a second. Let's start with intimacy. There's this show that no one has watched because I keep asking people, except for Jeremy. He's the one who got me watching it, called Miss Davis. And in the show Miss Davis, it's on Peacock, you can watch it. Not safe for children, probably safe for work. I don't know, depends on where you work, I guess. I don't know, that's a thing. Those are gauges of things. Don't watch it when your kids are around, but watch it when you're at work. that's a thing. This show, it's not a religious show a lot, but a lot of Jesus in this show. Probably my favorite on-screen Jesus of all time. Top three on-screen Jesuses. This one from Miss Davis. Because I think Jesuses in movies are very cringy sometimes. Very like, this is not a good thing. Ben-Hur, Audra. The Ben-Hur remake. That Jesus is awesome. And then I think I have to give it up to Jim Caviezel and The Passion. He did a really good job. Those three. Those are my top three. Not that that matters. But anyways, this Jesus, it's a woman who has become a nun. And she's only been a nun for a couple years, and she only became a nun because she had this experience where she, quite literally, not metaphorically, fell in love with Jesus. And when she meets Jesus, she goes to this place, it's a restaurant, and she's the only person in there, and he's the only other person, and he makes food for whoever comes into the restaurant. It's usually one at a time, and he makes food, and he serves them, and he watches them eat this delicious meal. And in this experience of Jesus serving her, she literally falls in love with him. And they become, throughout the show, very intimate. Very intimate. And that's why it's not safe for children. But it is beautiful and it's wonderful. And I'm watching this show and I'm like looking around like, who else? And I'm jealous of her relationship with Jesus. I'm like, I want that. Like this, he plays this wonderful, it's not even it's this relationship they've created, this intimacy, this closeness. And it's the closest, that last song. I asked Monty, I was like, hey, next week, play that song again. Because they played that song last week, the one we just sang, because it's very intimate. It's very, there's some words. And there's other songs where we sing worship songs that sound like love songs. Very intimate. There's a South Park episode where they just want to create a Christian band because you can make a lot of money in it. And they take love songs and they just take the word like girlfriend or boyfriend out and put in Jesus. And it works and they're famous. And that's true. Like, there is something, and we don't talk about it a lot. But when Jesus has these encounters with all kinds of people, they're very intimate encounters. There is something about the intimacy of this, and it transcends. It's what I think takes Christianity and makes it not a religious practice, not a theological thought, not just this thing that I'm into or a thing I try to do. It takes it a little step further to say, there's this divine, and I'm intimately involved in it. You get it from the very beginning of the scriptures. The Adam and Eve poem, the creation poem, is all about this intimate relationship with God and people, walking in the garden and laughing and talking and holding hands. And then you get to this person of Jesus, and because we subscribe to the name Christian, we get to say, yes, Jesus is representative as the best husband ever, who serves, who loves, who keeps no records of wrong, who is kind and generous, and this wonderful lover, this wonderful partner. Like, this is the relationship, and I want it. And watching this show, I feel like they just nailed it. I don't even know, I don't think they were even trying to do this, but they just nailed it. I was like, that is a beautiful, beautiful relationship. There's something intimate going on, especially when we encounter Jesus. I'm going to hold that there. So just hold that thought, intimacy. It's hard for us. There's some people, you know, I'm looking at you back there, this is a hard concept. They will sing these songs. You're like, I am not. It's tricky because it's vulnerable. It's letting go. It's inviting. This idea of God, Jesus, and us being intimately involved in that relationship. All right, let's stop that there and go to the other thing in that breakfast story of engagement. Last summer, I spent 2 weeks with this guy. We were doing a job for McDonald's, and we flew and drove all over the place. And I was in the car with this guy for hours and hours and hours. And if you've ever been in the car with me for any amount of time, I'm going to tell you my entire life story. And I'm going to ask you your entire life story. And I love it. This guy, I love to talk about God and spirituality. And I'm talking about it a lot. And finally, this guy goes, hey, you know that I'm not like a Christian or into any of that, right? I was like, I don't even care. This is exciting. And he was like, okay, cool. I just needed you to know that. But I really got to know this guy. And he works for this really cool marketing research company. And they're this nationwide company that does all these like kind of avant-garde sort of approaches. And he told me, we were talking about it. And he's like, hey, what we look for when we're hiring any person in our company, it's not their education and not their experience, because we can teach that. He's like, I'm looking for curiosity. I'm looking for curiosity. He's like, because I haven't found a way to teach that. I haven't found a way to create that. You just need to be naturally curious, and that's who we want. And the whole time I was like, you know, I'm curious, right? And he's like, I get that you're curious. I did have to say that at one point to be like, I want you to be my friend and like me. But that stuck. That conversation stuck with me all the time because I think about it all the time. And what I like to do is take something that I hear and like, okay, how does this work into my Christian, my Jesus worldview? What does it mean to be curious? And in this, every story of Jesus is him being curious, engaging with other people. He's asking questions. He's telling stories. He's challenging. He's inviting. He is involved with all the people he comes in contact with. There's several times where you're seeing him leave the crowd and go and engage with someone. There's a story where it's kind of getting into the thick of it. He's getting closer to Jerusalem. He's going to die, Jesus, and he leaves. He's like, I'm going to check out for a second. And he goes a different way. He goes through Samaria, and we don't have time to go into it, but there's intense hatred between the Jews and the Samaritans, and it's rich, and it's long, and it's not just, hey, we don't like those people. It's embedded into their religious belief. It's embedded into their not just who they are ethically or sexually or all these things. They're just, Samaritans are the worst if you're Jewish. And if you're Samaritan, you probably think the same. And so the idea, if you ever read, man, Jesus walked into Samaria, man, he shouldn't be going there. Good Jewish rabbi, teacher, he shouldn't be going there, shouldn't be hanging there. And he goes and he walks in, to the town. And he comes to this well. And he meets this woman, the Samaritan woman. And it says, in parentheses, it'll be like, and his disciples checked out. They left. They went to go get food. So the disciples left. So you get this idea. The disciples aren't there. It's just him. And it's just this woman, which is another kind of no-no for this good Jewish rabbi to be alone with this woman without her husband, without other people, to be alone with a Samaritan at all and engaging. And Jesus walks right to the well. She's there, I don't know, welling, doing whatever you do, get water, I guess. I'm welling right now. I don't know, it sounds like a thing. It should be, if not. So she's doing that, and he engages with her. He's like, hey, he's like, can I get some water? Can you get me some water? And she's like, well, you don't have a thing, a barrel or a bucket, or I don't know what they used, a pitcher. So you don't have a thing with the rope on it to get the bucket and the water. She's like, well, you don't have anything. And he kind of transcends the conversation to, man, I'm actually talking about something different, like this living water. And they have this great engaging conversation about God, about bigger things, and it ends. You should go read it. It's in John. It ends in this beautiful conversation. But the whole thing, in every story we read almost about Jesus, is him engaging with someone else, leaving outside of what he knows. He'll step away from a crowd. He'll step away. He'll corner with people, and sometimes people corner him, but he engages with them. He's very curious. He's asking questions. He's talking about things that are bigger. He's telling stories. He engages with people. And I love that breakfast story because we have this a little bit of intimacy, which we'll talk about again, and a little bit of this engagement. So now I want to talk about the table. My wife is who taught me about the table. I didn't grow up knowing about what the table meant. My wife has a table, and I've never seen it, but she talks about it so much that I picture it, that she grew up with in her family, where they would eat, and it's this long kind of wooden table with these benches, and she had a big family. She was part of this huge family, and they would sit and eat, and her grandmother would make food and serve as everyone ate, and she would also sit at this table and watch TV while her grandmother cooked, and she would do her homework at this table, and the table meant something to where when I first had a dinner with the Coppolas, I was introduced to the table, and it's awesome because they're all like Jersey Italian, so it's Carmine Jr., Carmine III, and Michael, and Joey, and Tina, and Barbara, I guess. It's a thing. And they're all fast-talking, and it's like, I'm on an episode of The Sopranos right now, and it's awesome. They're eating, and there's so much food. There's so much food. Her grandmother Newman, even to the point where she lost her eyesight as she got old, you'd go to her house, and I was too skinny, which she was awesome. No, yes, I was too skinny all the time. I was like, thank you, and I wasn't ever. But she would just give me food and just keep more and more food because it was important, and the table mattered. And Kristen has brought that into our family, brought that into our world to where I know that the table for our family is where we have good conversation. The table isn't just that we're eating food so that we can not be hungry. It's not about that. And I see Kristen's grandmother all the time where Kristen loves to just have people over and make food. She wants to be busy in the kitchen and bringing food out and everyone's eating it. If you're in the Italian family, you get a lot of gravy, which is just spaghetti sauce that you keep adding more to, and it's awesome. When we first started Legend, a lot of it was centered around food and table, which is awesome. I love food so much. It was centered around a table, and I remember there was a lot of people that came, and we ate, and my wife would be like just she felt so much purpose. She's like, this is what I do, is I serve people at the table, and I just like to eat. I don't help do any of the things. And I eat. And in that, so much conversation, and you had so many different roles. Jason and Kim were too polite to say that they don't like beans, and so they would just not say anything and not eat their food. It was like Joel's bean casserole, which was so good. And there was Trevor, who, much to my wife's chagrin, would buy McDonald's and bring it because he never trusted what anyone else would make, so he would eat McDonald's. And there was me, who would just eat. To the point now where when we, I would eat Jason and Kim's bean thing when they didn't. I was like, who didn't eat this? I'm so upset. There was nothing left for everyone. I like seconds and thirds and fourths. But to this point now where even when we have people over now, we're at a table, and there always comes a point in the dinner or in the meal where they're like, okay, you guys want to move to somewhere more comfortable? They always say that. You want to move to somewhere more comfortable, where you know, the den or the living room where you can sit? And I never want to. I never suggest it, and I never think about it, because I love the table, and I love eating and sharing food. My wife taught me that, but I believe it's actually something deeper. It's something, this is Jesus. He's always eating food. He's going to dinner. He's eating with people to the point where, man, Christians celebrate, when we do still today, the idea of coming to a table. The early Christians, when the church first started, it was around meals. Hey, we eat. And I remember Paul's letter to the Corinthians, when he was angry at them because the rich people would start eating the food and drinking the wine, and the poorer people who had to work all day, well, at the time they got there, the food was gone, and the wine's gone, and he's mad at them. He's like, you can't do that, because eating together matters. It's not about just getting full. It matters. To the point where poets and writers and songwriters and artists throughout the centuries have pictured the next life, the life to come, the one after this, as a giant table of God in which we are all invited to come and eat. At the table, we experience, I think, the intimacy of God, of each other. I think there's a very intimate thing happening when we share meals together. And there's engagement. At the table, we are participating in the life of Christ. There's engagement because we're talking, and hopefully we can be people. And it's hard sometimes because not all of us are engagers. It's easy for me because you're going to be stuck in the car with me. I'm going to be like, hey, tell me, you know, is your marriage cool? Like, I'll just ask anything. And not everyone's like that. But at the table, we can all, just as we eat and have something in common, we can engage each other. We can talk about higher things. This all brings us to this sermon series, what we're about. Legend's DNA is food and gathering at a table. And just as the years progressed and as everyone had children and things got harder, we've lost a little bit of that. And Jason and I lately have been like, man, we need to make sure we're all engaging with each other. We don't want to, the purpose of us gathering isn't just like sermons and songs. It's sermons and songs. It's engaging with each other. And some of us, man, are really good at that. And some of us can be left out. And some of us, there's just a lot. And so we want to do this sermon series. And so this is what's going to happen. It's going to go a couple weeks. But starting this Thursday in the newsletter, Jason's like, okay, I guess I got to do something in the newsletter now because I just made it up just now. We're going to start a sign-up sheet that'll be digital. And we'll have a physical one here for 3 weeks. And then starting in August, there's people who have graciously opened their house to host. And we're just going to do for 6 weeks a weekly dinner where you sign up in the sign-up sheets and we'll put you in a house and you show up. We're going to have food. We're going to be around a table. We're also going to have like communion, fancy bread and wine or slash juice. We're going to have communion. We're going to have a meal. And usually, and some sort of guided discussion just about God and where we're at to grab that intimacy more. In an attempt to say that this is important, this is an important part of who we are, this is an important part of who God's made us to be, and that the table is important. And so the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about different ways the table is represented in the scriptures, different ways it's used, who's invited, everyone, and what we do around the table. But I wanted to start this week with just the idea that A, if you don't have it, man, the search for the intimacy with the divine that is there, that is part of us, and we can experience that with each other as we grow with each other, and engagement that we need. It is, I think, part of us, and for some of it's easy, some of it's hard, and that's part of all spiritual life. So for all of us, we have hard things and different things, but engaging with each other and in deeper ways than just, hey, how's it going, is part of who we are. It's part of what makes us community. It's part of what makes us close, and doesn't mean that we have to be best friends with everyone, but it does mean we have to engage. And so please, the ask is that, man, sign up, go to one. Our hope is that we need to go ask more people to host because we have too many. And I hope that we feel encouraged and blessed and loved, and you feel like you're on an episode of The Sopranos every week, engaging and eating food and being with each other. We're getting ready to go into our time of communion, and that's what this is, right? That's what communion is, a meal originally. It wasn't like the thimble and paper that we have now. It was a meal. Man, we're getting together to celebrate this meal because what Jesus did with his disciples, it means something. It means you're invited to this table. It means you get to participate into the divine. And ideally, it means that you're sharing this with others. And so we have this moment of communion to have a meal with God. And my prayer is that, man, we just increase our intimacy with who God is and Jesus and how it works in our life, and that we increase our engagement with others, because that's really how we change the world. But I'm going to pray, and then the band's going to come down, and we're all going to come down anytime you want while they sing a song, and you can take communion. The hope is over the next couple weeks, and we're going to end it with trying to do a meal here with everyone on a Sunday, which is going to be a really hard thing to do. But man, please keep coming. Please keep engaging in this series and engaging at the table. I'm going to pray, and we'll keep going. God, thank you for food, right? It's so good. Thank you for drink. Thank you for that the example that you gave us in Jesus is that we eat together. That's what's going to break down barriers. That's what's going to break down denominational walls and walls that we've built. This is what we do, and we do this at the table, and we do this around food. And you and your spirit do this through us. So be with us as we engage. Be with us as we drop some of our insecurities and can become more intimate with who you are as the divine being that exists within all of us. Thank you for that. Be with us as we talk about the table and talk about food and talk about what that means for our spiritual life. Man, we pray these things because, man, we love Jesus a lot. Amen.